Joanne B. Barnhart.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Ava Guerra on behalf of Larry Ruffalo, the claimant in this case. This is a Social Security case that went to appeal to the U.S. District Court, and there were two opinions at the U.S. District Court. The first was a magistrate's report and recommendation recommending a remand of this case for several reasons, and the second was a rejection of that report and recommendation by the U.S. District Judge. In this case, Mr. Ruffalo suffers from both knee problems, having had three knee surgeries, and cervical disc problem, both of which were being treated in Wisconsin at the time of the hearing and by the time of the date last insured by two physicians who both opined that the claimant was unable to do even sedentary work. The ALJ's decision is flawed in two specific areas, as mentioned by the magistrate. First, there's a Dr. William Daly who reported and provided answers to a questionnaire reflecting that the claimant had the need to elevate his legs above his heart level for 2 hours a day during a work day, and the second was that he needed complete freedom to rest whenever he needed to because of his pain. The ALJ never mentions Dr. William Daly in his decision whatsoever. Not only does he not give an opinion as to why he rejects this doctor's opinions, he doesn't even mention this doctor in his opinion. The magistrate recognized that that was, inappropriate. He basically indicated in his decision that an ALJ must at least minimally discuss a claimant's evidence that contradicts the commissioner's opinion or their position. And clearly, because Dr. Dale contradicts the commissioner's opinion and position that the claimant was not disabled, this should have been mentioned, and there should have been some logical bridge provided between the ALJ's opinion and how he got to that opinion, which he should have evaluated the record as a whole. The second area that the magistrate found was flawed.
But would the decision have been any different had he so discussed those two points?
Well, it is our position that absolutely it would be different. The only doctor that...
What do you have concerning Dr. Dale?
He doesn't have anything concerning Dr. Dale. Dr. Dale was the physician who was...
Assuming
yes.
That he referred to Dr. Dale's report that you're referring to.
Okay,
what is in his report?
His records reveal that the claimant has significant problems with his knee. He has pain. He has the need to elevate his knee or his leg 2 hours out of an 8-hour workday, and he has the need to be able to rest as needed when he has pain and or other symptoms from his knee problems. The ALJ only considered...
What did Dr. Spotswood say concerning that?
Dr. Spotswood agreed with Dr. Dale, and he was treating the claimant for a C7 radiculopathy problem, which the ALJ completely discounted because he indicated there was no evidence in the record that showed the diagnosis of the C7 radiculopathy. However, the claimant was receiving epidural injections into his neck by Dr. Spotswood, who's an anesthesiologist at a pain clinic, and he was treating him for what was presumed to be a herniated disc in the cervical spine. Our argument to the district court was that the ALJ had a duty to develop the record if he felt that it lacked sufficient information to be able to make a decision concerning that, and I believe that the Seventh Circuit has decided in Smith versus the Commissioner that the ALJ has such a duty.
Even though he doesn't think that he has the problem?
Well, he has no reason not to think that he's got the problem. The only doctor the ALJ relies upon is a doctor who evaluated the claimant in 1996. The hearing was in 1999, 3 years later. The claimant was treated in California when he worked for 21 years for Chrysler, and he had a knee problem, which was work-related, and that's the only doctor that the ALJ relies upon. The claimant then relocated back to his home in Wisconsin and began to treat with three specific physicians. One physician has no records in...
Dr. Dale, in the questionnaire that he answered, did he reflect, or did he answer whether or not he had ever examined the patient?
I believe that...
Or did he just rely on other people's examinations and opinions?
Well, Your Honor, I can't... I was not the representative below, but the questionnaire does ask...
Did he cite any medical findings to support his assessment? Regarding his ability to work?
Well, the questionnaire I have before me, Your Honor, asks whether the patient's findings or experiences of pain are consistent with the diagnosis and findings.
We're not talking about the pain now. We're talking about his assessment of his ability to work.
I'm sorry, you're not talking about which...
His assessment of his ability to work.
His assessment is on the questionnaire.
Pardon me?
His assessment is on the questionnaire. And the questionnaire says that the claimant's diagnosis and findings are consistent with the symptoms that he has. So I would presume that a doctor would not put his medical license on the line.
Did he cite any medical findings to support it?
Not in this questionnaire,
okay.
But he was the treating physician. And Dr. Spotswood, we have his operative notes, which reveal the cervical disc epidural steroid injections. And our point is that if there was not enough information, that the ALJ should have sought to develop the record further. Nonetheless, he should not have used the 1996 opinion in 1999 when this claimant had additional impairments that were not even considered.
Well, when you review some medical history, don't you look at all of the reports?
Well,
if they go back 10 years.
Correct. The ALJ did not review all of the medical reports. He only reviewed from 1996 going backwards, not forwards. And we were in 19...
He didn't review any of them from 1996 forward.
He mentions Dr. Spotswood in his decision. He does not mention Dr. Daly whatsoever. And the magistrate said in his decision that this stymied the court's ability to take the logical steps that he should have taken in order to show the court why he made his decision regarding his residual functional capacity just based on a 1996 report. A second finding that the magistrate indicated that this should be remanded for is the fact that the ALJ did not consider the side effects of medications that Mr. Ruffalo was prescribed. From 1996 to 1999, he had been taking OxyContin, Vicodin, Toradol, and Soma, all of which are, according to the magistrate, potent drugs and supported by the physician's desk reference, potent drugs which can produce the kinds of effects that Mr. Ruffalo indicated at his hearing that he has from his medication, and his doctors have also corroborated, mainly that he gets blurred vision and he is groggy. The ALJ does not mention that whatsoever in any of his credibility findings or discussions, and for those reasons, the magistrate requested that this be remanded so that there can be a complete record and a complete understanding of how this claimant is affected in terms of being able to
what
work.
What drug is it that gave him the blurred vision?
Well, the last drug he was taking, two of them, was Vicodin and Toradol, both of which are narcotic medications.
When did he take those?
He was taking those in 99, at least when the questionnaire was completed by Dr. Dale. Question number six says, the patient states that due to the severity of his pain, he takes medication which results in dizziness and grogginess and severely limits his ability to pay attention and concentrate. And the doctor indicated that, yes, that was accurate. At the hearing, when the vocational expert was asked this very question as to how that would affect the occupational base, the VE answered that with that limitation, there were no jobs that this claimant could do. With regard to the side effects of the medication. Also, when he was asked, obviously, that if a claimant had the need to rest as needed, would he be able to work at any job in the national economy, the VE answered no. In his decision, the ALJ does not put those findings in and make an assessment as to the whole record. The only finding he talks about is the 1996 Dr. Wilson report, which only addressed the knees at that time. And for that reason, we would request your honors to affirm the magistrate's decision as opposed to the U.S. District Court's decision and remand this case.
Do you have any answer to Judge Crabb's decision that there is no reason to remand this for reconsideration of Dr. Dale's questionnaire and the side effects of Dr. Ruffalo's medication?
Well, I have an answer, yes, Your Honor, because it does not comport with the Social Security regulations.
Judge Crabb's decision doesn't.
Correct.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Catherine Siegel, and I represent the Commissioner of Social Security in this case. I'm going to just go right into the claimant's allegations about Dr. Dale's report. While it is true that the ALJ did not address it expressly in his decision, it's not surprising that he didn't. This report, if you actually look at it, contains very little information that would support the check marks that he makes in it. Just for example, there are multiple areas on the report that give the doctor an opportunity to explain the check marks on the report. On the first page, it talks about needing to rest, and underneath it, it says, please explain, and there's two lines completely left blank. Below that, it says, it asks if the patient needs to lie down, and in that issue, it says no. So that appears to contradict the resting limitation, but there's no explanation, and there's not even any indication on this questionnaire that the doctor ever treated the claimant or examined the claimant. And although the letter on the front from the representative says that Dr. Dale is a treating physician, there's really no indication in the questionnaire form that he ever treated the claimant. And indeed, the claimant never submitted any medical records from Dr. Dale, and to this day has never submitted any clinical findings from Dr. Dale. So it's really not clear from this record that Dr. Dale is a treating or examining physician. And so it's not surprising that the ALJ didn't address this this form, because it's very unlikely that it would have been given any weight anyway. If this case were to be remanded to expressly consider Dr. Dale's report, it's very clear that it would be rejected because it's unsupported. Our regulations are very clear that we can, that it says we give weight depending on how long the doctor has treated the claimant, what the diagnoses are, how supported it is. None of that information is in this report. So what would be the purpose of sending a case back? Even the magistrate judge who recommended the remand said that it would be pretty clear that it would be rejected for these reasons. And the district court very reasonably found that it wasn't necessary, therefore, to remand on that basis for an express decision concerning this report.
Perhaps you could address the other matter, the use of painkillers and their side effects. Seemed very odd to me that he at least didn't mention that, since certainly if they did have an effect, the man's ability to work would be drastically impaired.
Except that the record before the ALJ showed very little use of medication. There's one reference in August of 1996 from Dr. Wilson, who was the claimant's treating orthopedic surgeon. And he has one prescription for Darvastat for 36 pills. And that's the only prescription in that period of time, 96. There's no evidence in 97 when this Dr. Dale report has a check mark about taking medications that make him groggy, but there's nothing in the record that shows he even was taking medication in 1997. So we don't even know where he got this this conclusion about taking the medication making him groggy, because there's nothing in the record that says 1997 he was taking this medication. Same with 1998. Absolutely no evidence he's taking any medication in 1998. In 1999, we don't get anything in the record until October of 1999, when he's got some neck complaints. And that was from Dr. Spotswood that he got some medication.
Yeah.
But again, there's nothing in there that Dr. Spotswood's notes that says he complained about being groggy or that there were side effects that would require a change in the medication. That's usually what happens when a A claimant has medication.
Dr. Spotswood.
Pardon me?
Is he a general practitioner, a family doctor?
I believe he's a specialist for neck and condition.
In what?
He's a specialist.
In what?
In, for neck, for orthopedic.
But
an orthopedic
specialize in neck and spine, or is he just an orthopedic surgeon?
I believe it's an orthopedic physician. It's actually a surgeon, Dr. Spotswood. And
how about Dr. Dale?
Dr. Dale, we have no idea what kind of doctor he is. I mean,
that isn't reflected even in his letterhead.
No, there is no letterhead in
there. There's no letter.
No,
he
no letterhead.
He didn't send any accompanying letter.
No, the letter was from the claimant's representative, the disability representative.
Is he licensed to practice in Wisconsin? Do you know?
There's nothing in the record that says he's licensed to practice. I mean, it says MD next to his name, so I assume that means he's a medical doctor, but doesn't.
That may be in Illinois or Indiana or Ohio.
Right, doesn't talk about his qualifications at all, so we have very little to give his report any credit at all. As for Dr. Spotswood, his treatment is very limited. It's only about 3 months in 1999, which is right before the ALJ's decision. ALJ's decision is in January of 2000. The treatment from Dr. Spotswood was about 3 months, October, November, December of 99. So that neck impairment really didn't last very long before the ALJ made his final decision. And the findings in Dr.
How do we know that?
Pardon me?
How do we know that? That the neck impairment did not
because the
last.
Claimant said his neck problem started in October of 1999.
Yeah, but how long did they last?
Up through the ALJ's decision in January 2000,
but that's still only
4 months.
Yeah, we don't know how long after that.
No, we don't. That's not before the court. I mean,
no,
if
he was he had them at the time of the
right,
ALJ's.
Right. And I mean, if they were to continue afterwards or deteriorate to a greater degree, then he could always reapply for benefits.
And that's what he was taking the Vicodin for.
Yes, I believe that's
what he very well might have had.
It was prescribed by Dr. Spotswood, who treated the neck condition. But Dr. Spotwood's objective findings found no abnormalities. On page 149, he talks about having the upper extremities are symmetric and normal, it doesn't talk about any objective abnormalities in the neck. Just talks about the claimant's allegations that he's got pain in his neck. But he didn't have any actually, you know, x-rays or MRIs or anything like that at this point. He was just treating conservatively.
He did prescribe pain medication.
Yeah, he did prescribe pain medication.
So that pain medication very likely was still in place at the time of the hearing.
Yes, he was taking pain. He did testify about pain medication.
There is some basis for.
There's a basis that he's taking pain medication, but he doesn't complain to his doctor that he's needs a change in his medication.
But he does. But there is testimony or an assertion in this record that the Vicodin was giving him some problems in terms of his alertness.
Never to his doctor.
No.
Only made that allegation at the hearing, and the ALJ didn't find him credible at the hearing, because at the hearing he came to that hearing and said that he did absolutely nothing during the day. He spent 17 to 18 hours a day in bed, according to the claimant, and the ALJ didn't find that credible. He based it largely on his appearance. When the claimant came into the hearing, he was tan, he was well muscled, he was in very good health. He appeared to be in very good health. And that's one of those things that the ALJ has a hearing for. He's allowed to observe the claimant and weigh what he says against what he looks like and what the record shows. And he found he wasn't credible, and that's I think was reasonable in this case, especially given the apparent lack of treatment. I mean, the claimant says that she has these other doctors in Wisconsin, but we don't see a lot of evidence from them. She was given opportunities, or the claimant's representative was given an opportunity at the end of the hearing to tell the ALJ, we need to leave the record open to have all these other reports come in because we don't have them, but she didn't do that. And then after the hearing, there was no new evidence submitted. Even to the district court, there wasn't evidence from these other doctors that she was talking about, Dr. Fauerbach and Dr. Werby. We have a couple extra reports from Dr. Spotswood, but again, it just shows some treatment with medication and doesn't show any objective findings that would indicate a disabling severity of a neck condition. So,
all right.
If you have any other questions, I'd be happy to.
Thank you.
Okay.
Right.
And I just asked that the court affirm this.
Case number 8. Does she have any, you have no more time, thank you. All right.
The magistrate specifically says in his opinion, it is not the commissioner's attorneys who are to build a logical bridge. It is the ALJ himself, and the ALJ does not even mention a doctor in there. And if there was not enough evidence, he should have developed the record. This claimant was represented by a non-attorney at the court below and may not have had the full representation that he should have had in order to complete the record. But the ALJ had the duty to do that. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. We'll proceed to case number 8. Thank you both.